Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. overlooking beautiful Michigan Avenue. Steve Cochran and the gang roll in after 5, and we'll be with them as well. I want to welcome my guest to the show. Very excited. He is a musician, a travel writer, and we have a lot of stuff to talk about. One of the things we're going to talk about is the rise and fall of professional bowling. He has a great website called ZachariahCrockett.com, and we have a link on our Facebook page. We're going to talk with Zach Crockett right now. We welcome Zach to the show. Hi, Zach.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm great, man.
Cool. Let's talk about you. What's your background, and when did you start writing and all that good stuff?
Sure. Well, I grew up with two English teachers as parents. So,
oh boy!
Something that I was kind of always around. My dad is a drama teacher and an English teacher, and just kind of got interested in writing from an early age, and went to school, majored in English, worked in traditional publishing for a while, and then decided it really wasn't my thing. So, decided to kind of take a career swing and start writing again.
And so tell me about your website, ZachariahCrockett.com. What will people see when they go there?
Sure. Well, it's kind of just a personal site, just kind of a collection of my writing, my music, just some information about my travels. I took a year to just kind of go through South America and follow around some artisans out there. So I had a chance to collect some pretty awesome travel narratives and just meet some really interesting people.
Tell me about that. I mean, you said a year?
Yeah, just about.
Wow.
I was there for about 10 months and kind of just went there with no plan. And, I met all these amazing artisans who were doing these fantastic things. I spent a few weeks with an instrument builder in Bolivia. I spent a few weeks in a wood shop in Argentina. I spent a few weeks with a jewelry maker in the Atacama Desert in Chile. And, these are all people just pursuing, a craft and following a dream and kind of under the covers of society. So it's really interesting.
Was that the plan going in? I mean, were you like, okay, I'm going to go here and find these people? Or was it looser than that?
Well, my plan was kind of, just to go and immerse myself in a different culture and kind of just to see where that would take me. And, I think it's always interesting to travel without a plan. It's kind of just natural that way, and you kind of fall into adventures. And, I'm not really a fan of structure when I'm traveling. And it definitely led me to some interesting places.
I bet.
Yeah.
When you don't have structure like that, and tell me a little bit about what that's like. Was there anxiety for you? I mean, you hitchhiked and you didn't have a plan. Give me a little background on how that worked out for you. Did you freak out at all?
I think, my mom probably freaked out a little bit more.
Yeah.
I just a 24-year-old kid out there, kind of just exploring the world for the first time, getting outside of my comfort zone. There was definitely anxiety, I guess the downfall to traveling without a schedule or an itinerary is, you fall into some hairy situations, but it's all part of the adventure. And, there was an instance in Argentina where, I was held hostage by a cab driver.
What? Okay. I got to hear this story. Tell me this story right here.
Well, my girlfriend was flying in to meet me at the airport in Buenos Aires, and I was taking a cab into the city, and we had agreed on, some banal price, like $10 or something. And he locked me in the cab, and he had my backpack in the front seat, and he started demanding, $200. So here I am just, scratching and clawing at the windows, trying to yell at this guy in Spanish. It's fairly early on in my trip, so I was still kind of honing my Spanish skills.
Oh, man.
Definitely an interesting time. But
what happened? What happened?
I kind of just beat on his window long enough where I think he got a little bit worried about the safety of his cab and his well-being. So I eventually just negotiated, I think, $20 with him, and he let me out with my stuff.
Yeah.
It ended all right.
So, and then you did, so that's how you greet your girlfriend? You're like, hey, I was just in a cab. This guy was I had to beat the hell out of the cab to get out. Welcome.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, when you do that, you just travel around. You take, obviously, you have a lot of stories with you. Did you write about this stuff?
You know, I did. That's kind of my ongoing project. It's kind of my pet project. Just kind of this travel narrative project that I have. Just kind of a collection of all of the artisans I met along my way.
Yeah.
Kind of interweaving some of the more interesting stories, just snaking down the spine of Chile into the mountains. And, you know, it's kind of a, you know, a typical gringo story in a lot of ways where, you know, a young sheltered kid goes out and ventures off into the world. But I'd like to think that, you know, I made an effort to really get off the common path and find people, you know, doing very interesting things without a whole lot of attention.
That's really cool, man. By the way, the website is ZachariahCrockettWith2Ts.com. If you want to check it out, we have a link on our Facebook page, Facebook.com/NickDShow. Now, you are also a musician. Tell me about your music.
You know, that's always been another hobby of mine. Been playing the guitar for about 15 years now. I'm in this kind of southern rock band called Swamp Hammer.
That's a fantastic. That is a fantastic name, Zach. Who came up with that name? That name rules.
That would be Mr. Steve Lynch, the other guitar player in the band. He's kind of like an old timer slide player.
Yeah, man.
Cool guy. Yeah. Interesting stuff. You know, that's been going well. I've been a part of that project for about a year now.
Mm-hmm.
We were just featured in Guitar Player magazine, and, you know, we're on some local radio stations out here. So it's been a good road for us. It's
really? That's cool, yeah. Man. That's great. So how often do you write, man? Tell me about that. I mean, do you schedule yourself? I have to sit down and I have to write. When are you motivated to write? Tell me about that.
Sure. You know, I think any writer will say it's writing is kind of an organic process, so it's very hard to schedule it, to sit down and lock yourself into a schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the company I work for now, Priceonomics, we're kind of like a economics and data-focused blog. And, you know, it's 9 to 5 hours, but I often find myself, you know, working late into the night, or kind of just abandoning any kind of set schedule altogether. But, I'm constantly writing. It's a love of mine, and kind of reinvigorated that passion over the past few months working for this company. So,
well, that's cool. Now, do they assign stuff for you to write? I mean, like for instance, like the building roller coasters, which is a great piece. Was that something that you were interested in? They gave it to you, or how'd that work?
You know, I'm lucky to kind of have the liberty to choose my own topics. It's interesting. Priceonomics is kind of a economics and data-driven blog.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of came on as more of a culture writer, and I've just been kind of covering subcultures and just weird, wacky people.
Yeah.
Things you don't normally think about, you know. That's kind of my passion, just exploring subcultures and diving into these niche communities of people.
Well, tell me about the piece that you wrote about the business of building roller coasters. This is a really great piece. How did you fall into that, and why did you write about it, and tell everybody about what the piece is about?
Well, I kind of fell into it fortuitously. Actually, the bowling article that I had written the week before,
mm-hmm.
Someone reached out to me on Twitter and you know, said great job on the article. And I clicked on his profile, and it turned out he was a designer for a roller coaster design company. So it's kind of just like a, you know, serendipitous thing. And I reached out to him, asked him if I could interview him, and really just dove into the history and culture of roller coaster builders and kind of explored it from there.
Well, tell me about the piece. Tell everybody about the piece, about the roller coasters. The scream machines, as they were once called.
They were.
Yeah.
So the article, you know, it's kind of half historical, just about the interesting inception of roller coasters. And then the other half kind of focuses on the people who build these things. You know, we all ride them as kids, but we never really think about, you know, the people behind them and the incredible amount of work that it takes to put up these Goliath coasters.
Yeah.
Amazing, you know, works of design. So just a little about the history. They actually started in 17th century Russia as these huge ice slides. And the queen was so enamored with them that she kind of took it to another level and started constructing them out of wood. And at first they were very rudimentary, very dangerous. And, you know, over the years, people kind of took the idea and ran with it. In America, they actually started as an old mining railway that, you know, miners could easily take their coal down the mountain on this railroad system. And someone decided it would be an excellent idea to capitalize that on that and make it an entertainment source.
Wow.
Kind of got going from there.
You know, I got to ask you, Zach, have you seen did you see the movie Space Cowboys?
You know, I keep hearing about it, and I've heard a lot of people are disappointed that I didn't reference it. So
no, because, I mean, obviously Donald Sutherland's character is like this, you know, roller coaster design guy who's insane.
Right, right.
And there are fantastic scenes of old Donald Sutherland just, you know, laughing his ass off on a roller coaster, and it's pretty great, actually.
I'm gonna have to stay up late tonight and watch that.
There you go, man. Netflix. I mean, it'll, you know, since you wrote this piece, I think it'll probably be a little bit more fun for you to watch that then. Hang on, okay, yeah. Zach?
Sure.
All right, man. We are with Zach Crockett. Zachariah Crockett.com is his website. We have a link on our Facebook page. We're going to come back and talk more about some more things that he's written. He's a musician, a traveler, and a writer, and all kinds of cool stuff. So we'll come back and talk more with Zach coming up here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the seventh floor of Trip Tower. Here till 5 a.m. hanging out. Yeah, Steve Cochran and the gang roll in at 5, and it's an absolute pleasure every morning to hang out with those guys to end my work day. My guest is a writer, a musician, a traveler, Zachariah Crockett. ZachariahCrockett.com is the website, and we've been talking, and more interesting stuff that he's written about we want to get to. Zach, welcome back, man.
Hey, Nick, thanks.
Hey, tell me about, I got to tell you, man, I am a huge fan of bowling. I have a high game of 289.
No way.
Yeah, man. Wow. Yeah, man. I don't want to talk about the eighth frame, but yeah. and I've been on bowling leagues and all kinds of stuff, and yeah, man, there was a renaissance time for bowling, and you wrote about this, man, the rise and fall of professional bowling. I remember every Saturday afternoon, my dad and I would watch bowling on television. Tell me about this piece and what brought you to it.
Oh, man, this piece was just, you know, an absolute pleasure to write. And bowling just has this incredible story that really just follows the arc of America in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, just in brief, the basic premise of the piece is that these bowlers were just absolute rock stars in the 50s and 60s. They were raking in a lot of money. They had, you know, they were flanked by women. They graced the cover of Sports Illustrated. They were these massive cultural icons. Bowling, you know, interestingly, a lot of historians agree that it started as kind of a religious ritual in which participants would roll these balls of pins to absolve their sins. So it's got this kind of rich, odd history. But, you know, some of these, I guess bowling really started becoming popular in the 30s and 40s during these beer leagues. And these bowlers, these early bowlers, would be endorsed by Budweiser and Miller, and they would, you know, kind of face off on these television shows. And this was back in the day when there were only three channels, so
yep.
Bowling had a prime time spot there. And I was just astonished to learn, you know, the scope of how much these guys made and how successful they were. I mean, you know, there's one statistic that, you know, the top bowler in 1963 made more than the MLB MVP and the NFL MVP combined.
Wow.
in 1 year.
Wow.
So these guys were incredible. And I actually have a quote from Sports Illustrated from 1963 here, if I can read that.
Yeah, yeah.
This bowler's name was Harry Smith, and the article said, Harry does so well that he's able to support a wife and four children in style, tool around the circuit in a maroon Lincoln Continental, and indulge a taste for Epicurean delicacies. In short, he is the personification of the prosperity that has suddenly overtaken the world of professional bowling. And, yeah, I think that quote just says a lot about how immensely popular bowling was at the time.
Yeah.
And you know, the following year, this other bowler, Don Carter, was the first athlete of any kind to receive a $1 million endorsement deal. So bowling was just absolutely
wow.
Massive. I mean, that's 200 times what Arnold Palmer, the famous golfer, made in his endorsement deal with Wilson. That's 100 times what Joe Namath made from his Schick Razor endorsement.
What?
So these guys are phenomenal. I mean,
yeah. So why has bowling fallen off, man? I mean, you know, it's when you were doing research for this, is there any reason why? I mean, it went from the pinnacle to nothing.
Well, there's been a lot of speculation about you know, all the various reasons, and I did speak to a few professional bowlers about this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one pervading reason is that other sports simply became more popular. They had better marketing. You know, as television expanded, there were more channels and there was more variety. And you know, I think, you know, people had a lot more options. So I think, you know, the rise of media in the 80s and 90s kind of contributed to the downfall of that a little bit.
Yeah.
The other thing is... you know, a lot of bowlers I talk to say that bowling's a lot easier these days. You know, back then, bowling a 300 was just this incredible feat.
Yeah.
In 1968, there were only 905 300 games bowled. You know, 30 years later, there were 34,000 bowled in 1 year. So it's become a lot easier to bowl a 300. The lanes are slicker, you know. There's easier scoring systems. There's just a kind of an amalgam of reasons for that.
Mm.
But I think that's diminished interest a little bit too.
Yeah. Well, I love, you know, I mean, I love bowling, and I'm a lefty too. So
there you go. So am I.
Yeah, are you? Good for you.
Yeah.
Man.
Although my personal best is probably 200 points below yours. So
two away. So you bowled a 189 is your, oh no, I'm sorry. 89 is your highest game.
I'm gonna have to remorsefully tell you that I'm a horrible bowler. I usually use the gutters.
They put the bumpers up for you. They put the bumpers up for you when you.
I do.
The great thing about bowling. The great thing about bowling is that it's like it's one of the besides softball. It's the only sport that it's absolutely necessary to drink. While you're doing
totally
it,
true.
While you're
totally
doing
true.
It, you drink while you bowl, you drink while you play softball.
Yeah.
And right, this is, it's a great piece, The Rise and Fall of Professional Bowling. You can actually check it out at ZachariahCrockett.com. Have you seen the movie Kingpin, Zach?
You know what? I'm totally ashamed about my movie skills here. I really need to catch up with my podcast here.
So no Space Cowboys and no Space Cowboys and no Kingpin.
That's correct. You know. It's pretty pitiful.
No, it's not. All right, Zach, congratulations on everything that you're doing, man.
Oh, thanks so much, Nick. It was a pleasure.
All right, buddy. Take care. There you go. Zach Crockett, ZachariahCrockett.com, two T's in Crockett. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.